Hello, Serious Eaters. Welcome to the first in a series of special sauce episodes where we will grapple with the coronavirus pandemic. It's having a profound effect on everyone in the food world, but especially the millions of restaurant workers who have already lost their jobs. Normally, we turn to my friend Kenji Lopez-Alt, author of The Food Lab, for inspiring recipes and the science behind them. Today, we get a different kind of inspiration from Kenji. We're going to find out how he's adapting to the coronavirus crisis. His restaurant in San Mateo, California, Wursthall, had to be shuttered for the duration. But Kenji's finding ways to hold on to as many staff as possible, is personally delivering meals to those in need. Plus, he has dreams about economic justice for underpaid dishwashers and other restaurant workers. First of all, tell us about how this whole saga has unfolded in your neck of the woods in San Mateo.
Well, you know, Santa Clara County, which is right next to us, was one of the first places where the virus hit the U.S., at least the first confirmed places. And that was a few weeks ago. I actually had the flu right around then. And so I got a little bit scared. This is, you know, before people started like hoarding toilet paper and canned goods. So I actually got a little bit scared and went and got myself tested. There were no coronavirus kits available then, but I got tested for flu and I was positive for flu. So we are pretty sure that it wasn't coronavirus, but either way, like right after that happened, I started getting a little bit nervous. So I actually went to the supermarket and I bought, you know, like a few weeks worth of canned goods, and eggs and stuff like that, just thinking, you know, maybe I won't be able to get out of the house if I do get sick or if lots of people start getting sick. And then just a few days later, was when I think people really started freaking out, and acting, I don't know, like it was a zombie apocalypse, acting irrationally, really. Because nobody needs like months and months of supplies. And really all you're doing is creating sort of artificial shortages of things that, from everything I hear, supply chains aren't really going to be affected by this, at least minimally affected. So you're still going to be able to buy groceries, you know, next week or next month. But anyhow, as of a few days ago, the whole area, the entire Bay Area, is on lockdown. So all businesses are closed other than what they deem necessary services. So that includes pharmacies and supermarkets.
Right. So Wursthall, before everything had to close, did you see business just go south at a pretty rapid rate?
Actually, no. We were doing fine up until maybe a week ago. And that was basically when we started hearing the advice, you know, the social distancing advice. And at the time, there were no rules about whether restaurants could be open or not yet. But we sort of instituted our own in-house rules about how we were seating people. So we removed a bunch of tables. We made sure that every party was seated 4 to 6 feet apart. At the time, I think we had heard that 3 feet was the distance, although now it's up to 6 feet, what they're recommending. So we were seating parties, basically staggering them so we kind of put an artificial cap on the number of people we could serve, but that only lasted about a day or two until the full shutdown went into effect. Now we're open as a takeout business only, which is doing okay. We have sort of a skeleton crew of people working because we don't want people in close proximity to each other. So we're doing contact-free pickups. So the door is opened with a pneumatic, you know, there's a button that opens it. We let in one person at a time to pick up their order, which they place online. And, you know, we put it on a table. They come in, pick it up, walk out. So there's really no contact at all, which I think is really the safest way to do it. Aside from that, starting, well, I don't know when this podcast episode is going to go out, but right now it's Thursday the 18th. Starting tonight, I'm going to be going to the restaurant to put together meal kits that people will want to have ready to cook meals that they'll place orders for and then either come and pick them up, or I'm going to also be driving around and dropping them off, delivering them to people's doors. And with whatever profit we make from those meal kits, we're going to be making additional meal kits that we're going to be offering to for free, because, you know, there's a lot of people who are out of work, unemployment benefits, they've loosened the restrictions on those. So you can basically get them immediately after you've been laid off, because a lot of people are getting laid off right now just because businesses can't stay open. But even so, you know, unemployment is not enough, especially in the Bay Area. You know, There's going to be a lot of people struggling, and especially because the schools are closed. So there are people who are going to have difficulty working. Plus, they're going to have to be feeding their kids lunch, which used to be taken care of by the schools. So we're hoping to, you know, do our part in helping the community by putting together these meal kits that we'll then be giving away for free to families that are struggling.
Sure. So how many people did you employ? And what's happened to all of them? Did you have to lay them off, most of them off right away?
The day that the rules came out that we weren't allowed to serve in-house, we basically shut down the whole restaurant for 2 days to try and figure out how we're going to, you know, what we're going to do. We employed about 45 people. I don't know the exact number, but it's around 45 people, including front of the house and back of house staff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, everybody's been temporarily laid off. We've assisted them with getting onto unemployment. And what we're trying to do now is figure out a way that we can employ back as many of them as soon as we can. You know, it's literally physically impossible to employ all of them right now because of the proximity issue. We can't have people working closer than 6 feet to each other. So we can't really run our kitchens the way we used to. And more importantly, there's not demand. The business just isn't there. We're open for takeout, but we used to serve 100 people, a couple hundred people on any given day, and that was just enough. You know, restaurants, as I'm sure you know, are not a high profit margin business. So that was basically just enough to scrape by and pay all our employees and keep the place open. And without that business, there simply is no money to do that. So we're trying to figure out creative ways to hire back as many of them as we can, as quickly as we can. We are extending things like allowing sick leave to roll over through the layover. What we really want to do is get every person back hired as quickly as we can. But it's not clear how and when that's going to happen at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's the hard thing, is that nobody knows the timing. And it sounds like your business is probably, 15 or 20% of what it was before the lockdown?
Far less than that. We've only been open a day and a half for takeout business, but based on yesterday's numbers, we're at less than 10% of what our normal day is.
Right. And so you hope the meal kits will maybe add a few percentage points to that.
The meal kits we're not taking any profit on. So, but we are hoping that they'll become proper, that they will become popular enough that we'll be able to hire back some of our staff to help. Right now, we're doing it as a test run. I'm going to be doing it 100% by myself because, I can donate my time. So right now it's kind of like a trial run, and hopefully business on that will pick up to the point where we can start hiring back our regular employees because it's heartbreaking. You are a small business owner, and you know what it's like when your employee is struggling. It's like,
oh God, it's horrible.
You know, it's very easy to look out from the inside and say, well, just pay your staff. Well, like, you're going to keep paying them, right? It's like, well, I would love to, but they're literally, the money doesn't exist to do that.
And you guys are not, it's not like, you know, I think people think, oh, it's Kenji Lopez Alt's restaurant. There must be millions of dollars of venture capital money in back of it. But you guys sort of bootstrapped it. Your partners are
friends and family, small investments. They own a beer and wine bar, which has now been shut down probably permanently. You know, since we opened 2 years ago, I started working on the project 3 years ago. So far, I've made $0 on it.
Okay, as your business manager, that's a terrible precedent, Kenji. But yeah, it's really...
That's how those things go. It's like, yeah. Small businesses are not... like you said, we're not taking our private helicopter flights to the Hamptons every weekend.
Yeah, it's weird. People don't understand that even a restaurant like yours, which was very popular from virtually the moment it opened, it still means you're living from the week to week receipts.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, restaurants are very, very low margin. The folks at Maymay Kitchen in Boston, which is a great, great restaurant, they recently published an article in Eater that where they basically opened up all their books so that to show customers and staff what the economics of a restaurant look like. And I think in their books last year, they had a revenue of like $1.2 million and a profit of like $18,000 or something like that. Something absurd.
Right. After paying themselves, and they're not paying themselves $300,000 a year.
No. Yeah. And, you know, and for us, it's like when we first opened, and this happens to a lot of restaurants, you know, a lot of restaurants are really a game of sort of optimizing efficiency, optimizing or ordering, optimizing your menu. It's, you know, it's really just about pulling as much efficiency as you can out of your space. But so when we first opened, you know, we were slammed. You know, there was waits of like 3 hours to get in, whatever, 400 people a night. And we were literally losing money on every single customer that came into the door just because the cost of operating is so high and margins are so slim. And so, you know, by maybe 6 months in, we had fine-tuned operations enough where that wasn't the case anymore and we could start pulling in a profit. But still, like, the profit margins are extraordinarily thin, and there's always unforeseen costs. You know, it's like our we find out that our plumb, like our toilet, the pipes in the toilets were all rotted through. The previous owners hadn't disclosed that, and so like the middle of a Saturday night, they just stopped working, and that's like a $30,000 fix.
Wow.
Restaurants are not a business you go into if making money is your goal. It's you do it because you want to.
Yeah, because you want to feed people, and you derive a lot of pleasure from feeding people.
Yeah, I mean, actually, for me, it's really the most pleasure I get from the restaurant is watching the team and knowing that, you know, we have this business that's employing 45, 50 people, and that's great, you know. And as a restaurant owner or partner, and especially as a chef, you know, when I was a cook, when I started cooking, I don't know how long this was, 20 years ago, restaurant kitchens were not really fun places to work. You know, they were extraordinarily toxic and macho. And one of my goals as a chef was to make sure that our restaurant and our kitchen could operate, but that it was also a place that people wanted to work.
Right. Yeah, it's sort of the same thing as when I started Serious Eats. It was like, I want to make this unlike any other work environment I've ever been confronted by.
Yeah, and it was. I mean, having worked for you for however long, 10 years or, well, I guess 5 years full time and then continuing to collaborate with you after that, it was definitely unlike any other publication I've ever worked for. As far as our kitchen goes, people like working for us, which is nice, particularly among women, which, you know, historically women in kitchens don't have a great time. Other than one person who had to leave because of visa reasons, in the 2 years that we've been open, we've had 100% retention among back of the house women, and close to that with men as well.
Wow, that's amazing. Speaking of institutions, what would you like the institutional response to be right now, locally, on a statewide basis, and the federal government? Because, right, there are three things, right? There are the health issues that have to be solved, right? Then there are the issues of making sure that all your former employees and hopefully future employees can figure out a way to make ends meet. And then there's what happens when you do reopen and how do you get enough business?
Yeah.
I saw Tom Colicchio on a show and he articulated those three things. And, you know, he was saying that he thought even if the federal government did step up with money for people, that still 75% of the restaurants were probably not going to come back. Now, I don't know if that's a dire prediction or he was just saying that for effect. But clearly, there are going to be some changes no matter how fast the federal government reacts, right?
Yeah, yeah. And well, and one would hope that in the long term, there's going to be some positive change. You know, like this might, you know, the only silver lining of all this might be that it really exposes how vulnerable the most vulnerable people in our society are. And I think really, really highlights the issues around public health care, minimum wage, things like that. You know, it's insane that, you know, that a worker is incentivized to hide a contagious illness because there's no public health care, or because there's no mandatory paid sick leave.
Right.
And you know, those are things that just should not, it should not even be a question to me. It's like you're you know, especially like when at a time like this, a public health crisis, it's like you're actively making this this thing spread more quickly and get people more sick by not having those safety nets in place.
Yeah, it seems like in the last day or two, there's been a sea change, and it feels like there will be money flowing directly to all of your former employees. But it's not clear that, by the way, if the government sends everybody $1,000, how long is that going to last?
Especially like in a place like the Bay Area.
Your hope is actually, it sounds like it goes beyond whether they send $2,000 three times or whatever. And that your hope is that this just highlights all the inequities that are built into the culture that have to be addressed.
Absolutely. I mean, I you know, what I would really like to see is for wages in California to reflect the cost of living, because they don't. You know, wages for hourly workers, even though I think California's minimum wage is higher than the national minimum wage, but it's still not enough to compare to the cost of living out here. And meanwhile, there is like huge wealth disparity in the Bay Area. You know, there's two different types of people who live here. And on one end, there are the tech workers who get paid really, really well. And then there's the hourly employees, the people who, you know, the people who feed you and the people who work in service industries. And the disparity in those two things is crazy. But then you try and charge more than $16 for a hamburger.
And people freak out on Twitter.
Yeah, it's like or on Yelp or wherever. You know, so I really do think it's going to take something like a drastic increase in the minimum wage, mandatory, state sponsored healthcare and sick leave, maternity leave, all those things, and you know, so to force every restaurant to raise their prices at the same time, because unless that happens, the competition to survive as a restaurant is any small business is just too big to be able to say, well, I'm gonna do the right thing and charge what a hamburger should cost to be able to pay my employees. It's like, well, great, you can do that, but your business is gonna immediately go under because nobody's gonna pay that unless they have to.
Tom Douglas in Washington State. Of course, as you know, he's been forced to close 12 of his 13 restaurants. The only restaurant that's open is the hotel restaurant.
Yeah. Is he trying to reformulate plans to, you know?
Yeah, he's trying to reformulate Sirius Pie.
Mm-hmm.
So
as a takeout.
And I think he's doing that. He kept the bakery open for takeout, obviously, which is right across the street from the Hotel Andra and the restaurant that's there. That is open. And then he's, you know, because he's Tom Douglas, he's making meals out of his, in the front of his warehouse, where he makes his spice rubs and packages them. And he's giving all that money to all his employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking about 800 employees in his case.
Yes.
And so he's sort of saying the same thing you are, which is that it's not even a matter of giving people enough money in the short term,
right,
so that they can survive, although that certainly has to be done. It's really just ensuring that when you do reopen, that all the stars align and that it makes sense that the government, working with private companies like yours, will sort of join forces and figure out a way to have these businesses make sense as businesses.
Right.
You know, because right now, clearly they don't. So it's not... It really is a threefold problem, as Tom says. It's like, mm-hmm. what's going to happen to all these people, and how long do they have to go? And then what happens when the restaurants do reopen? You still won't have probably solved the problems you're talking about, right?
Certainly people will be more aware of the problems, but being aware is not the same as solving it. Like, you know, either provide what people need from through taxes and through government reform, or through higher prices at having prices that actually reflect the cost of living in areas like this.
It's affordable housing. It's a real living wage, right? It's all those things.
Food costs that are reflective of the cost of living, the cost of services should be reflective of the cost of living. Certainly universal health care, anything that doesn't incentivize workers to work when they're sick and doesn't bankrupt them if they do get sick. Maternity leave, I think, is important. Maternity and family leave in general. Paid vacation.
So are you hopeful these issues will be addressed, if not in the very near term, it's sort of in the medium term, so that it makes it easier to even break even or make a small profit in the restaurant business?
On the one hand, there are a lot of things that make me hopeful, which is that I think, in the last 4 years, especially with the current political climate in the current administration, I think a lot of people have become more politically involved and have started thinking about these issues a lot more, especially a lot of young people. So that's hopeful. The part that scares me is what's going to happen in November and what's going to happen after that. And just the general divide in the country is just in the world. It's not just us. Something's going to break at some point.
Do you find that being an independent restaurateur, that it's hard to compete with the bigger, either VC-backed or private equity or fast casual places or even the Sweetgreens of the world? Does that make it harder?
I don't think so. And it's also I consider us very lucky in that my partners were well established in the community, and so people knew that, trusted them to run a good business. And of course, I have my online presence, and that pulls in customers as well. So in a lot of ways, it's like we're very lucky as a restaurant, as far as marketing and getting customers in the door goes. As a long-term plan, it's like for my partners, for my partner Adam, the only viable way to continue working on the restaurant is to figure out how to open more locations. Whether that means shifting to something fast casual or a little more casual, or we've been talking about going, completely down market and doing things like planning a menu in restaurants that will go into like stadiums and airports and things like that. Very different from what we do right now in our place, but. So he's a smart business guy, and he's young and has a very good sort of feel of the pulse of the area and the demographic that we're aiming for, which is young families. I've never thought too much about the competition. Like, my goal has always been run this place the way I would want a restaurant to be run, treat our staff and our guests with respect, hope that do things smart efficiently, and hope that it works. Up until this current emergency, it seemed to have been going in the right direction. Certainly I think from the employee side and from the respect to running a business the way I want it to be run, and running a place that I would want to work at, that has been I've been quite proud of what we've done in that regard.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we're going to check in with you as the weeks go on, just to find out how Wurstall and you are doing as part of the way we're covering this on Special Sauce. And thank you for taking the time. We really appreciate it. And soldier on, my friend, soldier on.
Thanks. Thank you. It was good to talk to you, Ed.
All right, Kenty. Thanks a lot, man. We'll talk soon.